Time to run.
The Extramar Podcast Galloway Edition. The Extramar Podcast Galloway Edition is a podcast for runners of all abilities who want to learn everything they can about the Galloway Run Walk Run training method right from Jeff himself. This podcast will run walk run you right through Jeff's 20-week half marathon training schedule and gently get you to the finish line of your half marathon injury free.
To episode 6 of the Galloway Extra Mile Podcast Half Marathon Edition. It's time to run. This is your host, Kevin, and I'm out this morning on a very pleasant 5.5 mile run. Been a little bit on the tired side, so I'm adjusting my run-walk ratio a little bit this morning. Typically I'm a 4-1 kind of guy. This morning I'm running a 3-1 ratio. And I've said it before, it's one of the things I love about this program, because the program adapts to the way I feel. So I'm running 3 minutes and walking for one this morning. My training, my training has hit a buzzsaw. No, that's not right. It's not a buzzsaw. It's a snag. It's a bump in the road, maybe. And, but I don't think this is necessarily the forum to discuss that. The Extra Mile Podcast is really the forum for that. So, if by chance you are at all interested in this bump in the road, you might want to check out the next episode, which I think is going to be episode 118. So today's episode, we are going to cover weeks 13, 14, and 15 of the Jeff Galloway to finish half marathon program as found in Jeff's training programs book. Within that time period, we will have a 12.5 mile long run. We'll have our fifth and final magic mile, and then we will have our last long run before D-Day, a 14-mile long run. 14 miles, you say? But Kevin, that's going to be longer than my half marathon. Yes, fellow listener, it is. And that's a rather large topic that we'll discuss with Mr. Galloway in today's episode. Besides getting into some detail about weeks 13, 14, and 15 of the program, Jeff will tell us where he's been, where he's going, and we will catch up with Jeff in his quest to qualify for the Boston Marathon. I think that you will be amazed by his progress, but nowhere near surprised by it. Another great conversation with Jeff. What else? Oh, let me ask you a question. Why do you run? Seriously. First of all, that's probably the most common question any of us get pertaining to our running. And if I had to guess, one of the major reasons we all run is to stay healthy for our loved ones, for our little rugrats. But let me ask you this. Is maybe a corollary to that the fact that you want to provide a great example for the little rugrats? You want to raise healthy and fit kids. Well, that's a topic that we're going to hit on with Jeff today too. Jeff spent a rather large amount of time researching and writing a book that he calls Fit Kids, Smarter Kids. And although I'm sure none of us is surprised that fit kids tend to live longer with less health issues, etc., etc., but I think something that will surprise you is the fact that fit kids grow up to be not just smarter kids, but smarter adults, more well-rounded. It certainly was a little bit of a surprise to me. So we're going to talk to Jeff about that topic as well in this episode. And since all of you who are following along know how close you're getting to your big day, some of you may be a little ahead of our program, some may a little behind, but certainly you're all getting close. Then imagine how our guinea pigs must feel laying it out on the line for the entire internet world. They are all very, very close to their big days as well. So, let's catch up with them. See what our guinea pig trainer, Mr. Chris Twiggs, has in store for them and how things are going. Good stuff. So let's get to it. You and I will chat again at the end. You'll enjoy your extra mile.
And once again, let's head over to the Galloway Extra Mile podcast hotline. And my favorite part of the show, we caught up once again this morning with Jeff Galloway. Good morning, Jeff. How's things?
Good morning, Kevin. It's great to hear your voice and to be on the show again.
Well, I'm excited about this one because the first thing we're going to start off with, I always love to see where you've been and what you've been up to and where you're heading off to, but even more so this morning because you've been doing some what you're terming, at least some of your emails to me, as your research and development. So I wanted to touch upon that a little bit. And I know since the last time we spoke, you were in Dayton, Ohio, and then you were down in Florida. Tell us how things went in Dayton.
And Dayton was the Air Force Marathon, which was a wonderful, wonderful event. It just has – the military events have a special feel to them that is really neat. Having been a military person, I appreciate that, but – what's really surprising to me is that a lot of folks that have not been in the military but respect what the military is doing for us are there, and it's just a great feeling of mutual respect that is a little bit more than you feel in most events. The greatest treasure for me that weekend was to go to the pasta dinner where I spoke, and it was held in the Air Force Museum, which is a fabulous museum of all types of planes and all types of other things that the military has developed. There were even some bomb casings from nuclear bombs there and rockets there was a B-52 that was suspended over the top of the whole area where we held our pasta dinner. But the planes and the other weapons and instruments were arranged in decades, and these are things that you have heard about in history books, and now you can actually see them. And some of the very famous aircraft throughout the world. Anyway, it was fabulous. I just absolutely loved that, and I loved the event. I decided inadvertently 2 weeks before that I would just try to qualify for Boston, which I hadn't done in 10 years. So I did a little bit of R&D in between and ran up to 7 miles at about the pace that I would need to run, which is 9:33 per mile pace. And I haven't run many races, period, in the last 10 years at that pace. But I had run certain segments of training runs regularly at that pace, or maybe a little bit faster. And so I just decided, why not give it a try? And the bottom line was that I ran 30 seconds, walked 15 seconds the whole way except for downhills, and came real close. I was 38 seconds too slow and didn't quite make my Boston time, but it was a great effort. The deal killer for me was a 3 mile hill that started around 21 and a half and went up, just kept going up. That's where I lost it. I lost 2 minutes on that 3 mile stretch. Got a lot of it back during the last mile and a half, but not quite enough. So it was a great effort. I enjoyed the challenge, and I'm going to give it another shot, probably at the Space Coast Marathon in December.
Did you find, I know you and I have spoken in the past about how when you're running races, you're asked a lot to stop and take pictures or to talk to people as you're moving along. Did you have a hard time with that kind of thing at the Marine or at the Air Force Marathon?
I did not in that marathon. The pace I was going is a fast enough pace for most of the people around me that they were mainly focused on their pace and didn't want to lose any time and so forth. It is true that when I start at the back of the pack, which I love to do on most of my races, there are a lot of folks that would like to have their picture taken. I don't mind that one bit. It would have been a little bit of a problem with my goal the way it was, but it didn't happen in that race. What was interesting is the pace group leader for the 410 group, which is what I needed, initially had a group of around 30 to 35, and I just stayed right behind them so I wouldn't get in the midst of them. And at about 15 miles, that group really started breaking up, and every mile there were less and less people, so that as we started up the long hill, it was just the pace group leader and myself left in that 410 group. And she didn't stay with me for most of the uphill portion, and you know that wasn't a problem because I was conserving my resources for the end anyway.
Right.
I just lost a little bit too much. Quite honestly, on that day, which ended up at the end being a little warm, I don't know that I could have gotten much more out of myself. I was very pleased with my performance, and you know it brings back feelings that I have had over my 56 years of running, and that is there's a great joy when you come to the end of a significant effort that you've made in a workout or a race. The joy comes when you realize that you really gave what you could. A goal is something we don't know whether we're quite ready for, or we don't know whether we're up to the weather or whatever it is, but if we can put out what we could, what was available to us on that day, wow, it really zings the empowerment circuit in the brain, and I still feel good about that effort.
Oh, good for you. Congratulations. And then just a short 2 weeks later, you headed down for a 10-miler at the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror down at Disney World. Tell us about that one.
Well, as often happens at the Disney races, the folks there wanted me to get up on the live TV before the race, the big screen, and give some suggestions about pacing, particularly due to the fact that it was a warm night and very, very humid, somewhere around 85% humidity.
Wow.
I've done a lot of running in that type of conditions, and I've also advised a lot of people, mainly to stay safe and not to overdo it. So I was thinking about running a workout there, some more R&D, as it were. And the idea of the workout was, if my plan is to run a 9:33, which is what I have to do to qualify for Boston, then I want to do my workouts at around 9 minute per mile pace. So I decided to see how many miles I could run in that 10-mile race at a 9:33 pace using my 30-second run and 15-second walk. I started out at about 9-minute pace, and I hung on to that for about 4 miles. That's about what I was doing every single mile. And then I just found that the pace started picking up, and that was sort of a good feeling to have. And so I rode that wave and kept picking up the pace and ended up at the end with an overall pace of 8:43. I was very pleased.
Yeah.
The neat thing about, for me, and I don't ever tell anyone that that you can do what I do, or I don't tell individuals that you should do what Susie or Joe does, because different individuals find that certain ratios of running and walking work better for them. And so you need to figure out what is the best for you and then apply that. For me, the 30:15 right now is working amazingly well because I can get up enough speed during my 30 seconds of running and then have the fatigue really erased for the most part during the 15-second walk. And I was just running a little bit faster every mile as a result of that, had no problems with the slowdown at the end, and just had another great experience.
Okay. Congratulations. So what's coming up for you? What's on the horizon?
this weekend, I will be doing the Iron Horse Half Marathon in Kentucky. I've done this before. It is a fabulous course, horse country. The leaves are turning, just bluegrass. You see racehorses in some of the farms, and it's in a nice little town called Midway, and it really brings back the feeling of the races that used to be held 40, 50 years ago. Just a really neat event. Then next week, I'm going to be doing a retreat for runners down in the Dominican Republic. It's first time I've been down there, and it's a group that wants me to help the runners down there. Many of my books have been translated into Spanish, so I will be interacting with them mainly through an interpreter. I had Spanish in high school, and that was more than a couple of years ago.
Cerveza, that's all, cerveza.
Sí, señor.
What city are you going to down in the DR, Jeff?
Well, actually, it's we'll fly into Santo Domingo, but the actual location of the clinic is in a smaller town, and I'm not familiar with which one it is.
I gotcha. Interesting. So what else after that?
The next weekend is Marine Corps, and I am very, very pleased. I've been at that event for probably 18 years. I love that event. I help out with the clinics there, and a lot of the folks who run that event use my training program. So we have a great rapport with the folks who are running it. And I'm also doing two running schools there, and they're still open. If any folks live in the D.C. area, you don't have to be an enrollee in the Marine Corps Marathon to enroll in the running school. You can just go to jeffgalloway.com and sign up for it. But it's a fabulous event. I'll be running it as a training run, and it hopefully we'll have some really good weather.
Well, perfect. That sounds like fun. And then right after that, in early November?
Yes, I will be in Houston, Texas, and New Braunfels, Texas, in the first weekend in November, and doing some kickoffs for our training programs there, two great programs. I will also be the following weekend at my favorite event of all, and that is the Wine and Dine down at Disney World. It is a fabulous weekend. They give you a voucher for food and or beverage, or both, afterwards.
Nice.
And you can go among about 30 ethnic food booths around Epcot Lake. It is really a neat event.
Very good, very good. Sounds like you, as always, are going to be pretty busy coming up here, and have been pretty busy.
Yes, and I continue to hear from listeners, and they continue to say how valuable the podcast is in getting people who had questions, getting those questions answered. So you're just doing a great job, Kevin.
Well, thank you. Well, listen, let's jump into the guts of the episode 6, because I got another special topic I want to hit you up on after that. This episode actually covers weeks 13, 14, and 15 of your Half Marathon to Finish program from our textbook, the Galloway Training Programs book. And it includes, within that time frame, a 12.5, another magic mile, our last magic mile, and then a 14-miler, which is our last long run as well. So I guess first I'd like to know, this being our fifth and last magic mile, once again, tell us, remind us all how we should be running this one from an effort standpoint, and then how we should use the data from these five magic miles.
Well, as you'll see in our textbook Galloway Training Programs, the magic mile needs to be done progressively faster, meaning that the first one should be really easy. The second one should be faster than the first. By the third one, most folks are really into the routine of how to improve time. And by the fourth one, either third or fourth one, the magic mile time comes down again. And in most cases, when I've really studied it, the individuals run about as fast as they can go for 1 mile because they figured out how to pace and how to run it. In that case, it becomes very predictable in telling you what your potential is based on the more than 50,000 instances that we've had of folks that have run through the magic mile and then done their key race for the year. Then we can also determine what would be a safe pace to run on long runs for those that have long runs that are left, and that is 2 minutes per mile slower than one should than one could run as an all-out marathon pace, and 20% slower than one could run in an all-out half marathon pace. That's the conversion factor. When you take the magic mile time, multiply times 1.2. That'll give you your current potential in the half marathon. So the last magic mile, the only problems that I have heard from among the folks that I've worked with has been a case where folks didn't do some of the magic miles leading up to the last one and suddenly decided they were going to blast through the last one as fast as they could. Not a good idea. The idea of my training program is that we have these elements strategically placed through the program so that you develop the adaptations, you progressively improve upon those adaptations, and if there's an interruption in the training, you can lose those adaptations. So if you've had an interruption and not done some of the magic miles and suddenly are faced with the last one, don't try to run all out. Start out the first lap doing an easy pace, and then pick it up, see how you feel. It's okay to huff and puff on the second one. Never sprint, but on the third one, if you're still feeling okay and can pick it up a little more, do that. And on the last one, pick it up just a little bit more, but don't go into an all-out sprint. The only issues I've ever had with injuries on the Magic Mile have been among those who just tried to run too fast, mostly on the last lap.
So I'm no math whiz here, Jeff, but I'm pretty sure that 14 miles is longer than a half marathon. What's up with that?
Correct. The last long run is designed to over-prepare you for the distance. And the reason for that is if you have run 14, there is no doubt that you have the endurance to run 13.1. But it's more than that. It's psychological, because those who have run the 14 miles have a greater feeling of confidence than those who have run less than that. The other issue is making some mistakes on race day. Most everybody, especially first-timers, make a few mistakes the first time they run. If you've only run 10, 11, or 12 miles as your longest long run, then if you make a mistake in the race, such as go out a little too fast, you can end up with some really tough miles at the end. By running 14 miles, even super slowly, because you have extra endurance, you can afford to make a few indiscretions early and still not only survive, but feel pretty good at the end. Psychologically, when you start to get tired, you can just tell yourself the fact, and that is, I've gone 14. I know I can go 13.1. This shifts the control center into your frontal lobe so that you can gain control over how you feel instead of letting that darn subconscious brain generate anxiety hormones.
Yeah, and I can speak from experience. I've done that in the marathon distance with your program, and that's absolutely a fact. When you toe the line on the morning of race day, and you think to yourself, "This is another long run, and it's not as long as I've done before." That is an amazing feeling, really.
Hallelujah!
Yeah, yours is the only program I'm aware of that actually calls for even running up to the race distance, much less beyond it. Are you aware of any others?
I am not aware of any other program, and I have had discussions and been on panels in a lot of cases with other coaches, most of whom advocate somewhere between 20 and 22 miles in a marathon and somewhere between 9 and 10 miles in a half marathon. After the clinics, a good number, almost 50% of the folks, the coaches that I've talked with, will come up to me and say, "You know, I realize that running longer would definitely be better in terms of the endurance and how strong you'll be in the race itself, but if I advertised that my program was going to be 14 miles as a long run and 26 on the marathon, I'd only get about half the people." The fact is that I want to offer the very best preparation for these events, and if we don't get as many people signing up, that's fine. I want people that want to come out and prepare themselves very well, and we know for a fact, based on our success rate and also the number of people that used to use other programs with lesser distance on long runs and then shifted to ours, how much greater success they have. And the numbers speak for themselves. In the marathon, those who used to run 10 miles and go up to 14 tend to improve around 6 to 8 minutes, depending on the survey, just by that one addition. And those
nice.
Who used to run 20 miles on their marathon and go up to 26, an average of 15 minutes of time improvement.
And that, believe me, if you've never run a marathon, that's huge. That is huge.
It really is. It's 30 seconds a mile overall.
That's amazing. Well, good. Well, listen, if it's okay with you, I'd like to shift gears for a minute and talk about a topic that actually you think is so important that you spent a decent amount of time writing a book about. I'd like to talk a little bit about a book that you wrote a few years ago that's entitled Fit Kids, Smarter Kids. To begin with, Jeff, I know that adults in the United States and obviously around the world are terribly out of shape these days. That's just a fact. What about the kids in the United States? What about our children? Are they any better off than the adults?
Well, sadly, America is a world leader in obesity. We have shown a tremendous increase in obesity over the last 15 to 20 years, and at first this wasn't registered as a trend around the world to the extent that it is in the U.S., but now it is, and it really threatens not only the health in our country and health care, but it also threatens the economy of the whole world because of the great amount of resource that's going to be required if we don't start turning some of this around. The good news with obese kids and overweight kids, which we're seeing more and more, and the statistics are quite alarming, the good news is that there is time to turn this around, that kids who are overweight are not usually stuck in their ways. And by adding a few fun activities that keep them moving, they can burn off some fat and turn on the circuits in the brain that will cause them to be healthier and to stay healthier. Because exercise does more than burn fat off. It actually enacts circuits that are turned on by the brain but are enacted throughout the body that keep the body healthy, that keep the functions in a healthy mode, resulting in less diabetes, less incidence of diabetes, and a number of other degenerative diseases. And a lot of this research I looked into when I did the research for the book Fit Kids, Smarter Kids. CDC provided me, CDC contacts provided me with a number of these studies, and other great studies were done by and coordinated by the Cooper Clinic out in Dallas, Texas. And what Cooper Clinic has found over the last 35 years is that even when obese or severely overweight kids or adults don't lose significant weight or any weight, even if they don't lose any weight, if they exercise regularly, rev up their exercise, their health profiles mimic those of leaner and fitter individuals that don't have a lot of weight on their bodies. So even if you're obese and find that you really can't lose weight, you're going to help your health by getting out there. And parents, you really need to think about this. Do you want your kids to be successful? If your kids are trending in the severe overweight or obese category, you're going to find, if you look into the research, that they're not going to tend to be successful because of health problems, and the loss of the ability to move around and interact with others.
So after I read this book, Jeff, one of the things that I found so interesting about the research that you had done is that it is not just how these kids being out of shape hurts them physically, but how it actually causes our kids to underperform in school as well, which I thought was fascinating.
Yes, and there are many different studies that that took on different tacks and how to analyze the data in these various areas. To boil them all down, you find a number of studies showing very simply that when kids start exercising, they do better in school. The kids that stay regular with their exercise solve problems better and progressively get better and better in their ability to deal with thinking issues, academic issues. They're less absent. They get more engaged in the teamwork in the classroom and instead of withdrawal. Whereas kids that are inactive, overweight, obese, tend to withdraw. And if they withdraw and don't get involved, they don't learn.
I can't recommend this book highly enough, and we will, of course, put a link in the show notes, but it's an eye-opener. I just jotted some notes down about fit kids, better math scores, reading scores, writing scores, their GPAs, as well as you mentioned, their attendance records are better. Better self-esteem, which is just amazing in itself, as well as obviously lower depression. So, yeah, that's amazing. And I also saw a stat that kids these days watch television for over 6 hours a day, and that the average parent today is twice as likely to be obese than just 30 years ago. So the point is our poor kids seem to be swimming upstream today, and we really need something like this to help turn that around.
Well, that was the primary reason for writing the book, but the other reason was that if kids just do a little bit of activity every day, they're going to improve their attitude. They're going to feel better. They're actually going to have a better quality of life as kids and as adults. The book has a series of fun activities that either kids can do themselves or, even better, parents and teachers can interact with the kids day by day. It has contracts between parents and kids, teachers and kids, youth leaders and kids. And kids, the research shows that kids respond to contracts. If they sign a contract, they tend to get out there and do it more, especially as the teacher, parent, whatever, reminds them that they signed a contract. It works.
You know, it was such a coincidence. I was I have a 6-year-old son, and I was at his soccer practice one day last week, Thursday of last week, and a couple of the kids, 3 or 4 of them, had done something the coach didn't like. We're out of line a little bit. So, you know, as some coaches tend to do, you know, YouTube, take off and run. And he first of all, I'm not sure I like that as a corporate kind of punishment anyway. Kids might get the idea that running is not a good thing and a punishment to begin with. But anyway, these 3 kids took off. He told them to run down to the end of the field and back. They made a game out of it. They raced each other. And when they got back, they did it again, and he finally had to reach up and tell them to stop. So the thing that struck me is kids want to do this. This is not something that's tough to get them to do.
That is a tremendous point, and the research backs that up too, that we are naturally designed to want to go out and exercise, and we build up a lot of negative brain patterns due to, unfortunately, some of the punishment tactics that are used in physical education classes and in sports teams, such as you just indicated. The neat thing is that kids are resilient, and they can find ways of having fun, and all power to those kids. What a nice story. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. So listen, we can't do justice to this book, but like I said, we'll put the link. It's only $19, and it comes with a Jeff Galloway autograph, as all his books do. But what one or two little points should we take away from this book by the time we're done with it, Jeff? What are the important things? One or two.
Well, one of the really fascinating things I learned is that kids will turn on brain circuits when they move at any age, and it starts when they are lying on their bellies as babies. And so moving kids there, or helping to walk with them when they're learning how to walk, to go out and walk, and then to do some running when the kids are ready to do that, it's more than the physical here. It really turns on brain circuits. The second major thing here that is often overlooked is that kids learn most of what they learn during their first 5 years of life from watching adults. So if you say you should go out there and exercise and you don't exercise, guess what the kid's going to learn from that? He or she is going to tell me to exercise, but I'm going to follow what the adult does. And it's a scary responsibility that we have as adults, but kids observe us and they mimic us. And if you have a behavior of going out and exercising, and then you also say, I feel so good because I've exercised and things like that, then you're going to tend to have kids that want to go out and exercise.
Yeah, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad, but the fact is your kids want to emulate mom and dad and do what mom and dad do.
We are hardwired. Our human condition is that we're, as youngsters right from the beginning, we're hardwired to observe adults and mimic what they do. That's just the way the brain is hardwired. And so if you provide a very good example in exercise, you're going to tend to have exercising kids.
This whole parent thing is an awesome responsibility, Jeff. I don't remember getting a manual when I came home from the hospital with my kids.
There should be, I guess.
There should be a contract there, too,
between the parent and kid.
Well, thanks very much for that conversation, Jeff. I love that conversation. That's up there with Running Until You're 100 in my book with the Fit Kids, Smarter Kids. Episode 7. So next time we get together, we're going to talk about weeks 16, 17, and 18. And for those of you following along, week 17 happens to be race day. So we're going to chat a little bit about what will be a very short taper, and then how to prepare for that big day. And then something that some people overlook quite a bit, the first weekend or first few days after race day, what that should look like and what you ought to be doing after that. So I'm looking forward to that too, Jeff. And maybe
help us get through this race
mentally.
Absolutely. And I'll be there. And also, again, you are hitting the topics that are not only important for the individuals who are running, but for our society, and I commend you for what you're doing.
Well, thanks, Jeff. Thanks. All I'm doing is grabbing knowledge from the books you write. I appreciate your time again today, Jeff, and safe travels. Have a good time in Kentucky. And if the stars are aligned right, I hope to maybe sit down and chat with you a little bit in Florida at the Wine and Dine.
I would love to do that. So I'm looking forward to the possibility of that right now.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate your time again today. Have a good one.
Thanks, Kevin.
And once again, let's head over to the Galloway Extra Mile Podcast Half Marathon Edition Hotline. We got to shorten that name somehow, don't we, guys? we've got our guinea pigs on the phone with us. How is everybody doing? Ladies first.
I'm doing great.
Doing great.
Nate chimes in. He wants to be a lady today. Why not?
I couldn't hear you. Sorry.
Hey, Chris, before we start, I had a question for you.
Sure.
I was playing around with some sort of a way to identify you and I and Jeff in this endeavor we're doing, and I've gone through a few gyrations of this, and none of them sounded good, but I think hit on one. You know, I tried the Three Stooges. That didn't work out well. the Three Amigos didn't seem to work out well. So what I've settled on is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's my dilemma. Jeff is clearly the good. So would you like to be the ugly or the bad? Does it matter to you?
Given the choice, I guess I'll take the ugly, Kevin.
All right. Well, you're taking one for the team there, aren't you?
Yeah, I think I know what I'm doing here.
All right. Hey, let's get started and see where our guinea pigs have what they've been up to and how they're going. Sheila, let's start with you. How are we doing?
Doing great, Kevin.
Let's recap for a second. Sheila has never run a half before. And the last time we spoke, what is today, the 15th? It was about 3 weeks ago. It was on the 19th of September. And you had a 14-miler scheduled for the very next day. How did that go?
Right. That 14-miler went incredibly well. What I said to Chris is that I think I finally got my hydration and nutrition combination formula down. I felt strong. I did toward the end of it, maybe like I'm forgetting the miles now. It seems like a long time ago, but maybe the last 5 to 6 miles, I started at a 1:1 ratio, which had been my long run ratio all through training. And then in the last 5 or so miles, I backed it down to a 30-30. And that made a world of difference. I felt really strong and kept my pace throughout. And I never felt like I kind of hit a wall like I had on my previous runs. And I felt good. It went well.
Very good. How did you, psychologically, how did you like the 30-30? I've done it before, and before I ever tried it, I thought to myself, I can't do a 30-30 because just as I'm starting to run, I'm going to stop and walk again. How did you feel before, and then how did you feel once you started running your 30-30s?
I said I didn't hit a wall, but by that point in my run, I must have been around 9 or so miles, and I was, I was feeling the fatigue of the run. So at that point, it felt like a nice break. I mean, it made it feel easier, even though in the end I was doing just as much running as walking. Having those more frequent breaks like that, it felt good. I think your concept of time shifts as you get that far into a run. So all of a sudden, at 30 seconds, I was kind of ready for that break. I think at the start of a run, it seems like it would feel, as you described, like, I can't believe it's time to take a break already. But at the point I was in the run, it felt right. It felt perfect.
And tell us about what happened after that then. What's after your 14-miler? Fill us in the last few weeks.
After the 14-miler, then, I had a couple training runs. I had my 5-mile run the following weekend, and then I had my taper week, which I only had a couple of very short, easy jogs that week, and I went right into, on October 6th, my half marathon, the Cleveland Rock and Roll Half on Sunday, October 6th.
Tell us about it.
Okay, well, it was great. I finished, we will say, I accomplished what we said. I finished just as Mr. Galloway always says, upright and smiling and wanting to, feeling like I could do it again, not right away, but in my future, wanting to do another race. It ended up being warmer than predicted and warmer than I hoped for. I was hoping for a nice, cool, crisp Ohio fall morning, and I did not get that. It was very, very humid and warmer than expected. Though it was below 70 when we started. By the end of the race, I believe it hit 80. It got pretty hot, and for me, I'm kind of a more of a cool weather person. So, and it affected a lot of people. The humidity was extreme. There were, unfortunately, we saw four or five people taken away by ambulance at different medical stops along the way, and I was just very happy to not be one of those people and keep going. But it did affect my pace, our pace overall. The friend I've said that I've trained with on some of my longer runs was running this half marathon with me. So we started at a 1:1 ratio, but really only about the first mile. And with Chris's permission, we took it to a 2.5 minute run, 1 minute walk. After that, and we felt good and we were moving along pretty well. But by about mile 8, we did back it down to the 1:1 again because it was just a sluggish, swampy kind of day. So we realized we weren't breaking any speed records. I think a lot of people were not, and we just wanted to just get through it, and we did. So it was a fun race. There were a lot of bands, a lot of cheerleaders and other groups along the route that really kept you going. It was a well-organized race. It was an inaugural event here in Cleveland for the Rock and Roll Half, even though they do events in other cities. But it was done very, very well. So lots of support along the way, good, hydration stops, and really overall a good race. Just a little disappointing because of the weather, which no one can control that. And I'm happy to say at near the end there's a turn right before you see the finish. So you don't see the finish line until you're within less than a tenth of a mile of it. You come around a corner and there it is. So I was very excited. I turned the corner, I saw that finish, and for a second I even kind of got tears in my eyes, like, here I am, I'm really doing it. I can't believe it. And finished off strong, finished standing, definitely felt the effects of the heat and the run, and my family was there to greet me, and it was just wonderful.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Chris, what do you got to say about this guinea pig and how she did?
Oh, well, I feel like I say this every single time we talk, but I am just, I'm so proud of all of them, obviously. But this is one of those neat stories where Sheila has taken on a new goal, something she hadn't done before, and went through the work day after day, week after week, stuck to it, stayed with the plan. And every time we talk to her, she's got more and more positive stories about the impact she's having on the people around her and the impact that this training is having in her life. So I'm really, really proud of her. I know that the weather was not ideal for the event, and that was one of the things she told me in her email reporting about how she felt, was that it really was pretty hot during the run. And that's unfortunate. We hope that for this time of year, we'd have a little bit cooler temperatures in all of these races. The ideal running temperature is 55 degrees. And anywhere between 55 and 65, you can pretty much run close to the times that your magic mile is predicting. You can pretty much run close to your goal times. Once that temperature gets above 65, it starts to have an impact on all of us, whether we realize it or not. And the fact that she was able to keep going strong, she listened to her body, she adjusted that run-walk ratio when she needed to help her get through the end. It's straight A's in my book, straight A's. Good job.
Oh, thanks, Chris.
So, Sheila, tell us, have you had time to think about what's in store for you, what your future Galloway running looks like?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, my running friend already has me talked into trying to do the Indianapolis. I think that's a half and a full marathon, the Indy 500, where you actually get to run part of it on the Indy 500 track in May. She ran that this past spring and really thought it was a great event. So I don't know. We might do that. I know there will be more in my future. I think it'd be interesting to do training, you know, more in the winter for a spring half and see how that goes. I've said I like the cooler weather, which, by the way, speaking of that, the very next day after my half marathon, I woke up and it was 46 degrees. So that's how it goes. So, you know, one day later, I would have had exactly the weather that I had hoped for. But it's okay. And I also just want to share with everyone, and I don't mind sharing, my time was 2:46 and 10 seconds. So, you know, I'm very happy with that. And now I have a PR and I have a number to beat on my next one.
Very good. Very good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Not that I'm a stalker, or not that I'd like to admit that I'm a stalker, but I saw some pretty awesome pictures of you in that race, and you're looking pretty good, even at the finish line.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I felt good. Thank you. And my other little itty-bitty brag alert, if I may, when my husband and kids met me at the finish line, they gave me my 13.1 sticker for the back of my car. So that made me happy, and that was such a sweet vote of confidence from them. You know, they got that ahead of time, and they were waiting there with that for me. My son had said long ago, you need to get one of those for your car, Mommy, and I said, well, let's wait and see.
Probably choked you up again for the second time of the day.
It did.
Great. Congratulations, and thanks very much for letting us be a little fly on the wall with your training.
Sure. Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Mr. Nate, how are we doing, buddy?
Yes. Doing well.
Let's recap. You've run a half before, but you've never run a half using run, walk, run. And the last time we spoke on 9:19, you had just completed the bird in hand half with an amazing...
Mm-hmm.
Somebody had to chain you down to keep you back a little ways. And if I'm not mistaken, you're about 5 days away from your goal race at Hershey.
Yes. Yes, I've been stalking the weather and all that good stuff. So
I think since the last time you had maybe a 15 and a 17 miler.
Yes. Funny you mentioned the 17 miler. I was just lamenting about that before the call.
I'm a stalker of your blog, so I know that how that went, but for those in the audience who are not stalkers, tell them about it.
Yeah, so first I'll go with the good one. The 15-mile run went really well. I felt amazing, like I did after some of the other ones. I did a route that I had never done and made it into I never made it into a 15-mile. It's usually like a 10-mile loop. But it felt really well, really, really good, and so I could have easily gone further for sure. I felt great afterwards, and then I did some speed work as well after that, 12 800s at a slightly faster pace. I am a glutton for punishment, so I wanted to make my magic mile before that to increase the speed. On that, I don't know what I was thinking, but it was, those 800s were extremely challenging. 12 at any speed would be challenging, but this was a test for me. So, and then the 17 miler, I just did that not this past weekend, but the weekend before, and I did that. I thought I had some allergies going on, but it ended up I had some sort of illness, and so I did a 5-mile run walk, and then I walked 5 miles, and I went home, and I had never done that before. And it was pretty discouraging. Had to blog about it, like you said. I had to talk to Chris about it, got on some meds. That was fun, too, and just realized that we're going to have a bad run. And even though I'd never done that before, it's okay. And I still went beyond the distance with the 15-miler. So, and I had an easy 5-mile run this past week and did my magic mile again with that. And it was within 5 seconds of my previous fastest magic mile, which I'll take since I had been sick. So that's my recap since we talked last.
Learn anything on the 17 miler, or I mean, it wasn't necessarily anything you did wrong, right?
No, I didn't do anything wrong. I was just sick that day, and that was. It wasn't like I, as far as I can tell, it wasn't like I ate anything bad or did anything particularly wrong. It just weather was fine. It was a little humid, but.
Okay, so Chris, I have, I think, two questions for you. First, should Nate be concerned?
I was.
Nate, I think you're breaking up on us. Can anybody hear him?
Not anymore.
Long run, even if it's your longest long run.
Hey, Nate, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
You were breaking up. We didn't get.
Okay.
I didn't get that last part of that.
Where was I?
Well, you were saying you didn't do anything wrong in the long run, in the 17 mile, or you were just sick that day, and I think that's pretty much where you dropped off.
Okay. As I said, I didn't do anything wrong on the long run, but what I did learn from it is that it's okay to have a bad long run, and just to keep moving and not allow that to discourage you.
Good. Chris, I had two questions, I think, that I'm kind of curious about with Nate. Number one, should there be any concern at all that Nate had a bad run on his very last long run before his race, first of all?
No. We've talked about this before, that everyone in a training season is likely to have a bad long run. We're all likely to have something that goes wrong. The run is too hot. We ate the wrong thing the day before. We have a cold coming on. Any number of things can cause this to happen. Nate made a really good attempt at getting through the whole season without having that bad run, and occasionally that occurs. If we run long enough, we'll have that one perfect season. But it didn't happen that way for Nate, and he had this bad long run. Unfortunately, when it comes at the end of a season like this, your training is not going to. It's not unfortunate that your training doesn't take a big blow. It's a fact. The training doesn't take a big blow from this. What's unfortunate is that your ego, your confidence, can take a big blow from this. And that's my only concern. Is I don't want Nate to feel like he is in any less good a position. I don't want him to feel like he's in a worse position going into this race. He's in great shape. He's in a good spot to go for a fast time at this half marathon, which is his goal. And we were working on a lot of different things. There are a lot of different angles we're working to get him that time. It has to do with the speed work that he's been doing and the long run he's been doing and the important recovery that he's had between those long runs. And the fact that one of those elements didn't go exactly as planned, that one long run, doesn't derail the whole train, not at all. And he has since that 17-miler, he's gone back and done some other work that hopefully has restored his confidence. And I still firmly believe that he's got a great shot at running fast time. He's told us all he wants to go under 2 hours at Hershey. And I, for one, am going to be sitting in front of my computer doing everything I can to find out what he does to succeed.
Yeah.
That leads me to my next question. I know, and I think other than that 17, every other race he's felt amazing. His half, his bird in hand half. Yeah, like I said, he had to hold back. What do you guys got planned for Hershey? And do you have like a plan A and or B, or what's the deal?
Yeah. So plan B is we should have covered this ground beforehand, but Nate, you don't have an identical twin, do you?
No, I don't. I hopefully will have a... Yeah, so no,
well,
I don't have an identical
B.
twin.
There's no plan B then. Okay, so there's no plan B. So without plan B, no. So here's here's the thing. Nate sent me the profile of this race. He's picked a hilly race, and I'm a little bit concerned about the hills. I'm a little bit concerned about how narrow the course looks to be
in
different places.
Yeah.
And so Nate set me up for this call today by asking me in an email, where should he line up and what should his strategy be with regards to where to line up? And I think for all of us, when we have a particular goal, not a wish, there's a difference between a wish. We've all entered races. I know I have entered races with a wish to run a certain time. That's different from a realistic goal. You know, I wish I could win a marathon, but that's not a realistic goal unless I put one on and don't tell everybody else that it's happening. So what his realistic goal is to run under 2 hours, and so that's right around 9 minutes and 9 seconds per mile. And so when he lines up, he needs to line up in that range, and hopefully it will be made clear to everybody. A lot of races have signs up that will let folks know if you're going to run 9-minute pace here, 8-minute pace here, 10-minute pace there. So, Nate, what I want you to do is line up at the right spot for your pace. Don't get too far ahead, and don't let yourself fall too far behind that. I want you to stay right in that range for the 9-minute pace. And then from looking at the profile, it looks like the climb really happens at around 6 miles. And so if you just start off on pace, expecting to run right at 9-minute pace, don't push too far ahead. There's so much a tendency when we run races to go out fast. You need to hold back on that. If everybody else around you is honest about where they're lining up, and talk to them and ask the people around you if they're realistic and if they've all got about the same time goal as you do. And if they do, then don't pass them. Stay in that group for those first 6 miles. Use the run-walk ratio that we've talked about for about 9-minute pace. It should be 4-1, running 4 minutes, walking a minute. Use that ratio. Stay on that pace and try to hold it. When you get to that hill at 6 miles, you may need to take a little bit extra time to get up it. Don't worry about that. Don't let that fluster you, because you've got a good downhill close to the end. And as long as you're within spitting distance of your goal time when you hit that top of that last hill and you're coming down, you're going to be able to make it up toward the end. And when you get past 10 miles and you can really smell the finish, let yourself pick up the pace and let yourself push through those last 3 miles. And I think you're going to find that you've got a lot of energy left in the tank, and you're going to be able to come in really fast. Your last 3 miles should be the fastest 3 miles of the run.
Absolutely, yeah. That sounds great.
Have you guys talked about at a certain point knocking off the walk breaks at all?
We haven't talked about that, but I would say if he finds himself at mile 10 and he's on pace and he's feeling good, then just stick with the plan. Stick with what's working, and get closer to the finish on that plan. If at 10 miles he feels like he's starting to waver a little bit, because this is a time goal race, this isn't just a finish it race, but because he's got a time goal, at that point at 10 miles, feel free to shorten the walk breaks or cut the walk breaks out and run on in from that point if you feel like it's going to be close. Because I'd hate for you not to get it because you felt like you were forced to stick with the walk breaks. Most people are going to be able to stick with the walk breaks all the way through, and they're going to feel best doing that. But there are a lot of folks that will have that burst of speed that happens toward the end, and by cutting out walk breaks, they're able to push through to the end. But you only do that at the end. You don't cut out the walk breaks early on. The early on walk breaks are the most important one. But for a lot of folks, getting that PR or getting that age group award or getting that Boston qualifying time sometimes means burning that little bit of extra energy at the end. Here is what happens, though. when you burn that extra energy at the end by cutting out the walk breaks, let's say from 10 on in a half marathon or from 20 on in a marathon, you are going to pay with some extra fatigue. You're going to pay with some extra, maybe some extra pain, some extra stiffness in the days following the race. So the difference might be if you stick with the walk breaks through all the way through 13.1, you're going to be dancing that night and you're going to be running 2 days later feeling great. Whereas if you cut out the walk breaks and you run on in at the end, you might not feel as much like dancing that night, and that stiffness is going to continue for a few days after the half marathon. So you have to decide which one is going to, which thing do you want to focus on to make yourself the better Galloway poster child. You know, it's, hey, I'm able to run fine 2 days later, or it's, I got the time that I was after in the walk break to help me get that. Both of those are great, and hopefully both of those can happen at the same time. But sometimes when you're chasing a time goal, sometimes you have to choose.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Thanks, Chris.
You bet.
Just a little bit, I've gotten to know Nate. My guess is if he sets a PR, he doesn't care if he can walk for a couple of days.
Kevin, you know me well, yes, that would be correct.
Are you going with, I know you've done some of your other stuff with some non-Galloway runners. Are you going to this one with any of your buddies?
Yes, I have several that are running it. So.
Is there any friendly competition going on here?
Nothing specific at this point.
Okay.
But I will take the 19 minutes and or 18 minutes and 40 seconds, 41 seconds off my time, that's enough for me. I can be like, that's enough competition. I'm running against myself.
Sure. Good for you. We'll look forward to listening and seeing how that goes in our next conversation. Thanks. Thanks very much, Nate. Suzanne.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, Suzanne.
Hey, Kevin.
How's things?
It's raining in Chicago today.
Oh, I wonder if it's heading our way. Ah, I think it is. It's supposed to get rain tonight.
Probably. I'll send it on.
Like it. Yeah. Listen, the last time we spoke,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken, you had done a Chicago half in a very, very hot, on a very hot day, much like Nate was telling us, about 81 degrees or so.
Right.
But that you felt pretty strong.
I did. And you double back at one point, and son Mark saw me, and he yelled, "Hey, Suzanne," because yelling "Hey, Mom" doesn't quite cut it across the things. And then he hollered out, "You're looking strong," and you got to love hearing that, because it was about 7 miles into it, and feeling good at 7 miles is a very good sign.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So fill us in on the last 3 weeks.
Well, the day after we spoke last time, I had my goal half marathon, which was Women Rock, a smaller race here in Chicago. And it was started at 57 degrees, which is closer to my running temperature. Personally, that's about as warm as I like it, but I'm another one of those cold-natured runners. And it was a lot of women. The course was very crowded because, of course, Chicago was getting ready for the marathon, which happened this past weekend. But we had a lot of fun. I managed to come in at 2:54:55, which is a good 6 to 8 minutes faster than I have during the past year. So as far as a personal best, it depends on what you define as personal best. So I felt like I had really improved. I had some bronchial issues the last 4 miles, and you could really tell looking at each mile my pace dropped enough that it would have been better if I hadn't had to rely on emergency inhalers for about a mile there. But as I said, the day was beautiful, and the only disappointment was, although you had promised that you, Nate, and Chris would be with the male models at the end of the finish line, I looked and looked and didn't see you.
Well, that didn't stop you from getting some pictures taken, though, did it?
No, but I didn't go over to... I
didn't realize that there were male models with their shirts off taking pictures at the far side. And I just kind of ambled back. I did get my glass of bubbly, and I got the necklace that we won for participating, and then came on home to snuggle up with the male model that I live with.
Ah, how sweet. You're saying that, and is he even listening to this podcast?
Have I been listening to this podcast?
No. The male that you went home to snuggle with, does he listen to this podcast?
No.
Oh, so you said that without him even going to be able to hear it.
That's right.
Oh. So how did you feel after the race?
I felt great. I really felt great. We had a little party, a little celebration for my friends that were in it that night. And whereas we didn't dance, we weren't gimping around either. I would like to brag and let Chris know that he didn't get an outstanding personal best from me, and I haven't told Chris this, but a good friend of mine who's a few years younger, but not much, and had just started with the run, walk, run, and she had done several halves and was looking to improve her time, and she followed everything that I was doing, and we interpolated the speeds based on her magic miles, and she knocked 30 minutes off of her average time.
Mm.
So she not only got a personal best, she got a personal very best for all time.
Congratulations to her, too. Chris, what do you got to say about Suzanne and her journey here?
Oh, gosh. I mean, Suzanne is just so inspirational. I mean, she really is such a great such a great model for all of us for how we need to look at our running, how we need to think of our running, and how we need to think of our lives. There are so many things. I'm thrilled with people taking on new things. I'm thrilled with people trying to go faster than they've gone before. But the most important thing that Jeff Galloway is about, and the most important thing that we are about, is making sure that people lead healthier lives. And that is what Suzanne is modeling for us, just healthier in every aspect, her body because of her continued running, but also her mind and her spirit. You can hear it in the way that she talks about the fun that she is having out there with her friends. I'm just so blessed to have been a part of this podcast with all of these guinea pigs, but I feel like I have learned a tremendous amount from Suzanne. And Suzanne, thank you so much for letting me be a part of all this with you.
Oh, thank you, Chris. You've bestowed a bit of young wisdom into this older person. Between the two of us, we might come up with something.
Indeed.
Suzanne, while we're on the topic of stalking, as I have been for this episode, there are some pictures of you available as well during your big race. And I have to tell you, there's, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 pictures of you, and you're like, you've got a big smile on your face every single picture, which, you know, people are always saying, I don't run because when you look at a runner, they look like they're in pain. But you looked like you had a blast that day.
Oh, that's, you know, what's funny is that back for the Edinburgh Marathon, and I don't even remember doing this, I enjoyed the company of a Scottish lady who was running her first half, and I she was struggling, and I introduced her to Galloway, and she picked it up, and along the way, you know, you're thinking about anything you can, and I said, look at the people that are smiling. The people that are smiling are having a good time. Now, why do we want to be out here and not enjoy ourselves? We've paid good money. We need to be enjoying ourselves, so let's do what feels good. And she remembered that some now 2 years later and mentioned it on another picture that I was caught with a big smile on my face, just basically having a good time, and said that to this day when she runs, she looks to see what people, if they're smiling, to see if they're enjoying themselves. And I think that's very important.
You got that right. Good on you. Congratulations, Suzanne. I'm so glad you let us follow along this journey with you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Well, listen, let's wrap this up. And if you don't mind, let's I know a couple of you have already done your big races, but let's get together briefly for the next episode, if it's okay. And we'll see how Nate did in his big deal, and maybe discuss what you guys have got planned for the rest of the fall or maybe next spring, and see if anybody's got the bug to do a little bit longer than the 13.1, and just see how that goes.
There's a 110-mile run as part of the 26.2 with Donna, just in case anybody's interested.
No.
Yeah, maybe we'll ask Chris to put together a program for us that takes us from being able to run a half marathon in November to a full marathon in February. That would make sense.
Ooh.
That's just a hop, skip, and a jump, huh?
You bet.
We might not. Nate might do it on his day anyway. He might not stop at the finish line. All right, listen. Thanks for your time, everybody, and I appreciate you joining us today, and I'll reach out to you shortly for the next time, okay?
Thanks, Scott.
Sounds good.
All right. And Nate, good luck, buddy.
Thank
good
you.
Good luck, Nate.
Thank you.
All right. See you, everybody. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye.
Well, there you go, episode 6 of the Galloway Extra Mile Podcast Half Marathon Edition. I told you it was good stuff, huh? Hey, how about our guinea pigs, huh? Sheila, the first half marathon ever. Whew, kind of gave me goosebumps just to hear her talk about that. Suzanne, our sweetie Suzanne, finished her half marathon in a much faster time than she's been doing it lately as well. So all good stuff with them. And in our next episode, we'll find out how our buddy Nate does in his upcoming Hershey half marathon. And if the last few long runs he's been doing are any indication, we're in for a surprise from Nate. Thanks again for downloading the podcast, taking us along for hour and a half or so this morning, this afternoon, whenever you happen to be listening. Thanks to Jeff for stopping in, as always, and Chris Twiggs and his three guinea pigs. Couldn't do it without them. If you're a parent, I would recommend you get over to Jeff's website and order his book, Fit Kids, Smarter Kids. Like I said with Jeff, we only touched the surface of some of the stuff in that book. Jeff spent a long time researching and writing that book. And I think you'd be very surprised at some of the statistics he's dug up and some of the programs he's put together to make your kids fitter and smarter, actually. So I'll put that link in the show notes, but it's pretty easy to find Jeff's books, all of them, over at jeffgalloway.com. Absolutely worth the $20 and the amount of time it's going to take you to digest that book. Episode 7. Whoa. Episode 7 is going to include weeks 16, 17, and 18. And of course, week 17 is D-Day in the Jeff Galloway to finish half marathon training program. So we'll get Jeff's tips and tricks for towing the line on your big day. And not to be forgotten, we'll talk to Jeff about what the week after your half marathon should look like. That's a pretty important time frame as well. So check it out in the next episode. We'll plan on posting that one in about 3 weeks. I've got a little vacation coming up. which hits in about 3 weeks, actually, and coincidentally will be in Orlando, Florida. I am not running the Wine and Dine, although, boy, do I wish I could. I'm actually leaving Disney World the morning of that race, so I'll not be able to toe the line there. But I certainly hope to buy Jeff a cup of coffee and sit down and chat a little bit. And if I do, I may just take my little recorder with me. So hopefully maybe we'll get a conversation with Jeff as well. That's all I got for today. Thanks a lot again for the download. Get over to the website where you can find all the show notes for today's episode, as well as our comment line, our email address, our Facebook page, and if you're so inclined, maybe leave us a review over at iTunes. It's been a while since we've had any reviews over there. Those are always much appreciated. So that's it. Hope your training goes well. Until the next time, y'all enjoy your extra mile.
Joining us on the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition. Please visit our website at www.thegalloweyextramile.com to see the show notes for this episode of the podcast. You can email us with your feedback about the show at thegalloweyextramile@gmail.com. If you would like to send us your audio comments about the show or have questions about Run Walk Run, please send an audio file to thegalloweyextramile@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much for downloading the show, and we look forward to joining you again soon on the next edition of the Extra Mile Podcast, Galloway Edition.